Hold on a second, Fred. Hey, I gotta turn off this. Do. Okay. Wait, did she just send me a... I think she just sent me a wiener emoticon.
Good.
No, I guess that's a gaping smile.
Either way.
Try not to be weird, Fred. I know you're excited, and then you get awkward when you're excited.
I'm not weird, nor am I excited.
Welcome to episode 62 of the Fantastic Neighborhood Show. I'm John Anderson. Joining me, as always, is Fred Earhart. Say hello, Fred Earhart.
Hi, everybody.
And our special guest host is Cassie Chu of Electronic Superjoy fame.
Hello.
And with that, I'm going to stop being awkward and hand it off to Fred.
Yeah, everyone. So welcome back to the show. We don't often do three mic podcasts, but when we do, we like to do them big. So we brought Cassie on. Cassie, why don't you tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
About myself, huh?
So I met you at PAX East this year.
I believe so, yes. Yeah.
Briefly, anyway. You were working the Electronic Superjoy booth.
I was, yep.
And why don't you tell us about your involvement in the game?
I am the level designer and one of the pixel artists on the game. It's a ton of fun. I'm very excited.
Cool. So, go for it, John.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit more about your game, because I mean, I've seen the trailers, and like my first meets is kind of like Super Meat Boy meets dubstep meets. I don't have a third meat, so it fails the three meat. It fails the three meat test.
The three meats.
Yeah. So yes. if you had to give it the three meats seal of approval, what would you give us?
I would say, and I think a lot of people have been saying this as well, it would be probably something like Meat Boy meets electronica music meets Limbo. Because those are the big things. Meat Boy, because of the intense platforming action, it's really, really hard, which is why it's awesome. The music is all electronica done by a Newgrounds artist named Envy, and he's freaking amazing. He's so good. He let us use his entire portfolio of stuff, so we are super grateful for that. His stuff's so good. And I guess because of the art style as well, a lot of people were comparing it to Limbo. That's the doorbell. That's the Michael Todd. He has arrived.
All right. So, let's, normally we kick it off with what we've been playing recently. So, so as the guest, why don't you tell us what you've been playing recently? Besides your own game, obviously.
Lately I have been playing a lot of Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate for 3DS. I wish I had the Wii U version, but I need a Wii U first.
I'll sell you mine.
There's a catch 22.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, the words need and Wii U should really never be in a sentence together.
Oh, that's not true. No.
You need to sell yours, John.
Yeah, I need to find somebody to buy it.
You have to understand, I'm a born and bred Nintendo fangirl, so I need a Wii U is kind of a thing for me. Well, unfortunately,
Fred and I are 30-year-old suburban raised males, so we are also raised on Nintendo.
We've played a Nintendo game or two.
Yeah, it's just a
couple, just maybe like two of them.
Yeah, it's yeah. Just man, I bought it launch day, and it's been kind of a bummer. But so like it's refreshing that you're playing Monster Hunter, because that is definitely not kind of in our wheelhouse. Why are you so masochistic?
Was catching them all not enough for you?
Oh god, don't even get me started on Pokemon. Okay. Monster Hunter, because it's just you're right, I'm totally masochistic. I have this thing for playing games that are way too hard for me. which is also why I'm playing a lot of League of Legends. So,
who are you?
Hello.
And then you know, in your, you know, and then when you're not doing that, you're playing Dark Souls, right? And
I wish. I have way too many games. It's on my list of games to play. But yeah, it's high there on my list. I just haven't gotten around to it.
John, when she's done with a short play session of League of Legends, like, you know, 17, 18 hours, she manages to creep in a little bit of Monster Hunter. Stop asking for so much.
So, you know, the things, Monster Hunter is, like, one of those things that I kind of would want to get into, but the, you know, then I wouldn't be able to play, like, all the other games in the entire world ever.
Yeah, you're definitely, like, right about that.
So is this your first one?
Actually, the first one that I played was the one on the Wii, so Monster Hunter Tri.
Okay, and this is, like, kind of a... This is an update of that one, that version, right?
Yeah. I feel like it is. I wasn't sure what I was expecting with this one. I was thinking, it's like, oh, cool, I'm going to get a whole new world, and, you know, it's awesome, it's fine. And then I turn it on, and I'm like, oh, I'm back in Moga Village. Eh, whatever, I get to carry it around. I don't care. This is still going to be fun. And then I played more of it, and I'm like, oh, this is like the Wii version, except, like, way more expanded, and there's a lot more content and cool things to do. So I'm like, yep, I'm happy, this is good.
I think I can certainly empathize with needing to scratch that itch, but, like, as deep as I'll go, I think is my horrible addiction to Fire Emblem. Fred is in the same boat as me.
Yeah, I've been in that boat for a long time, dude.
I'm finally on the last. Okay, what seems like the last, like, story battle, because I bought Pokemon Conquest, like, for $15 a couple weeks ago, and I've decided that's my next portable heroin fix.
That is a decent deal, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also, like, you know, going to be my first Pokemon game ever, so there's that. But, you know, I'm finally getting to the end of Fire Emblem. And Fred, you know, like, I've complained pretty regularly about, like, the inability to initiate homosexual relationships in this game.
You've complained incessantly about it,
which is, as a straight guy, it might seem weird to a lot of people, but it is. While it's not made obvious they're not able to reach S rank in the game, there is very obviously something going on between Crom and my character. Like,
your character can also go both ways, though, because you could have made a female character.
Yeah, but it's very obvious by, like, the extent to which Crom is willing to maybe let the world go into a apocalypse to save my character, that it's more than just, like, a best friend, you know? It's more than that. Because, like, I got some friends, but, man, not like
John,
that.
I'd go through hell and back for you. I want you to know that.
Aww.
That's really sweet.
I mean, not really, but it was funny in that context.
No, man. Like, I mean, you know, Fred, you're not, like, super... You don't really give a shit about the story. But, like, I mean, it's essentially going to come down to, you know, a Spock in Star Trek II situation of...
Oh, of course.
You know, the needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few or the one. And, yeah, you know, Kirk, or in this case, Crom, is going to be upset. But, like... He's way too upset. Didn't I promise recently that we'd stop talking about Fire Emblem?
You know we're not going to be able to until we actually, one of us beats it, and I'm nowhere near beating it. I'm only like chapter 15 or something. I haven't actually done a storyline mission in that game for like over a week. I've only grinded.
What happened to me a couple days ago, I'm like, I gotta stop. I can only kill Fred so many times because I've killed you 5 times, and it's awesome. It's awesome every time.
Maybe I'm letting you do it.
Yeah. But it's got to end. I want to, you know, play that Pokemon game. I got a lot of plans for this 3DS. I've decided it's almost just a dedicated JRPG machine at this point. Because I don't think I want to dedicate couch time to those games anymore. If that makes sense,
right.
Like, couch time needs to go to games that are I'm going to say like 15 hours top out around there, with the exception of like BioWare stuff. My couch time has to be respected. If I'm going to spend 80 hours in something, I think I got to do it on the subway.
Dude.
Yeah, I agree. Dude, you know, I got to tell you
why don't I
let my guest talk?
Holy shit, Fred.
You know,
there's a delay.
The couch time is not necessarily, I got to say, I think I clocked in maybe like 44 hours so far into my Monster Hunter game, and I haven't even beaten like the storyline monsters yet. I haven't finished that. I'm like, I think I might be maybe like halfway through that, and like, that is it. 44 hours. I'm not even kidding.
Well, yeah. I mean, my save time... And, you know, my save time's up to 52 hours, but my – if you go to the activity log, time is into the 80s because, you know, a character will die and then I'll redo an entire battle. I'll have an entire week of playing this game that will progress my save time like 20 minutes, which is bad. I got to stop doing this. I mean
– Actually, Cassie, how brutal is Monster Hunter? Is it anything close to that, or is like your save time pretty – is it pretty close to what your actual time is?
I'd say it's pretty close, unless for whatever reason the 3DS is also counting the time in which my 3DS has like been closed on sleep mode or whatever. I don't think that's the case because I have been playing the crap out of that game. But
are there any like super difficult battles that if you lose you have to start over or anything like that? Like, because I mean, in effect, Fire Emblem is like. I mean, if one battle, like, right at the end goes south, you basically lose the entire thing.
Yeah, well, kind of the whole thing about the game is that it's sort of like you go into the village and someone gives you a mission to go and hunt this giant monster. It's usually, like, these sort of dinosaur-like creatures. Some of them are dragons, that sort of thing. And they give you 50 minutes, so, like, almost an hour, to defeat this monster because generally that's how long it takes to do it. And you can die up to 3 times before you fail your mission. Or you can it is a little bit more forgiving. It's not like you have to like, you know, go back, you know, 3 monsters back if you fail to kill that one. But yeah, it's like if you spent, you know, 49 minutes trying to kill this monster and he's still not dead and that 50 minute mark has passed, that's 50 minutes that you wasted trying to kill this monster and you didn't do it. You have to start over in that sense. It is still pretty freaking hard.
You know, I think I did it to myself. This is my first Fire Emblem game, and I decided to play it on classic mode where, you know, there's permadeath instead of playing it on casual.
Dude, that's the only way to play it.
Yeah. No, you're right. No, that is totally the only way to play it.
But, I mean, you know, I did it to myself, and I've only let a couple characters die so far, and one of them is what you'd think would be kind of important because it's one of the main characters' wives, but... Like, it was only by accident that they got married in the first place because nobody explained to me I mean, let's get real. The real reason I play Fire Emblem is for the dating sim.
You know, I know you're laughing, but that's only because you don't know that how serious John is about this.
No, it's incredibly, I think that's the only reason this game got me like it did. I mean, you guys talking about Fire Emblem, like you and friend Ed talking about Fire Emblem, yeah, okay, I'm going to check this out when it comes out. But on the real, like, it's, the relationship part is kind of like, the biggest hook for me, I think, you know, if I'm going to, like, you know, step back and be if I'm going to look at myself here. And then my second favorite reason for playing this game is simply Henry, his one sentence blurb when he does stuff, because he's a little psychopath. And I mean, besides that, I really find the combat loop, you know, to be acceptable. But those are my main things. And I'm going to stop talking about Fire Emblem now because I'm feeling kind of bad about myself.
I'd appreciate it if you did, John.
Besides that, I've been playing Badland on iOS. Anybody familiar with this? It is, I think if I had to describe it, it's Tiny Wings meets Limbo.
Interesting.
In that, it's so when you launch this game, you you go straight into the game. I was disappointed when I launched it the second time to find out that there is like a menu screen where you choose levels and shit like that. But you know, you launch right into it, and it's, you know, it is it's Tiny Wings without like, it's not so much the swooping mechanism, but the tapping to fly and stuff. But with the art style and sort of darkness and like kind of, I don't want to say horror, but that sort of overarching sense of like uneasiness from Limbo. And, you know, some of that's bubbled up when you actually get to the menus, because there are like maybe clones of the main, well, the character that could die, and it's like number of, you know, of these creatures saved and stuff. I think it's $1 or $2 on iOS. I can't recommend this enough if you're looking for a really gorgeous sort of one-handed subway experience. That's a big qualifier for portable games for me, if I can play it on the subway. But yeah, I definitely think this is one to check out if you're looking for something like that.
You know, when you said Limbo meets Tiny Wings, I know what you meant is that it's Limbo style art with Tiny Wings gameplay, but all I could imagine is like the happy smiling bird from Tiny Wings, like meeting his dead sister bird at the end of the game.
Dude, I wouldn't say that's entirely inaccurate, to be honest with you.
Ooh, fun times.
And I would say that the gameplay is a mixture of Tiny Wings and Limbo. Like there are puzzly, there it's not just score attack. That means level based, more along the lines of like a Rayman Origins, but it's definitely like there's a little bit more puzzle. There's a little more puzzly stuff happening.
But it sounds like it's still a variation on like the Perpetual Runner style game.
Yeah, it's kind of it. I mean, it's you're going from left to right.
Yeah.
But it's, man, it should be checked out by all. It is a pretty little thing. It's a pretty young thing.
You're the worst.
I am the worst.
That's exactly the sound that goes through my head when John's talking. John, remember games we said we weren't going to talk about anymore?
Oh, God. Seriously, like Gears?
I beat it, finally.
Congratulations.
I marathoned it.
Did you beat
it? I beat both stories.
Okay.
Same day. And after I did, I got to reading the internet about it. I'm disappointed with the internet.
Disappointed with the internet?
Yeah,
and why shouldn't you be?
Yeah, Jesus, Fred, why would you not be disappointed?
But the scores and the reviews I was reading for this game were all, I think they were all below what it should have been. I think that this was a good, competent Gears game. It wasn't what Gears 3 was. I don't even think it was what Gears 2 was, but I thought it was definitely better than Gears 1. And you know, all three of those I hold in very high regard. I think that Gears 1 actually aged pretty well. But the thing that held this game back,
if you go back and play Gears 1 and you like think about that, you're not ever fighting more than like what, four enemies at a time. It's kind of interesting, but like I think it's kind of impressive the way they hid some of their current, like at the time, their limitations. And you know, they blew those limitations out of the water eventually, but the way they hid that and sort of made Unreal Engine 3 look amazing in 2006 is just, I mean, it's flabbergasting in hindsight. Like it kind of, you know, the kind of stuff Epic does, like what they eventually did with, like, what the hell was that iOS, like, Punch-Out thing with the great graphics with Unreal Engine on iPhone?
Oh, I forget. I know.
Infinity Blade.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, them, like, doing backhanded, like, you know, dastardly tricks to making things look amazing is just, I mean, it's something to be admired.
Right, but I mean, and this game suffers from none of those limitations. I'm just sort of ranking it amongst the Gears games, but like, I would put all three Gears games in like my top Xbox titles, and I think that this one is no exception. The thing that held this game back, I think, to a lot of people was the story, which wasn't bad at, by any means, but it wasn't epic enough for a Gears title. What? Like, all three of the first Gears games were like the end of the world and the storyline to get there. Well, this one was sort of like a side story about, like, this shit happened and you didn't really need to know it.
All right, Fred.
To enjoy the main...
All right, pop quiz. What happens in the first Gears game?
In the first Gears game, you are Marcus escapes from prison because Dom breaks him out and not breaks him out, but recruits him. You have to.
What do they do by the end? What's the end goal in that game?
The end goal is to try to find the light mass missile.
All right, I don't even remember that. So,
oh well, then good for asking.
Kudos to you, sir.
Yes, I'm good like that. But yeah, this game was just, it's sort of this inconsequential story in the grand scheme of things. But while you're playing it, it's a competent story and it's a lot of fun. And you know, I'll say the same thing for the second storyline in this game. Like, it's a side story. It has almost like a DLC storyline feeling to it. Although kudos to them for including Aftermath on disc for free. Because I could easily have seen them trying to sell that as DLC.
Awesome, Fred. Awesome.
But no, it was a lot of, I definitely enjoyed the game. It's definitely worth the money, and you can get it for like $40 now, apparently. Yeah. And I'm actually looking forward to some of the DLC that's coming out for it.
You know, I'm actually like looking on Amazon.com right now, trying to figure out which Gears of War novels I'm going to send to you. Do you want Gears of War : The Slab, Gears of War : Coalition's End, Gears of War : Aspho Fields, Jacinto's Remnant, Anvil Gate? There are way too many Gears of War books.
Yeah, there's a comic book series too.
What's really sad is, I mean, like, I'm making fun of you a little bit, but I am the guy that read four different Mass Effect novels.
You know, part of you probably wants to read those Gears book if you had time too.
I'm eyeing up a move, and you know, if I move, I'm going to be in a situation where I'm not able to play games during my commute. I'm going to be like driving to work or whatever. And if that happened,
Gears of War book on tape.
Gears of War books on tape. It's going to happen, dude.
Do you think it's narrated by the guys who did the voices in Gears?
I don't know. I'll get back to you.
It's going to be, and then I looked at Dom. And Dom looked at me.
Oh, man. Maria. Okay.
You know, if that's actually how the books were done, they'd be like New York Times bestsellers.
Oh, man. Am I actually signing up for Audible right now? Maybe.
Get that free trial money.
This is what happens when we do a Skype cast. I'm free to like online shop when we do the show.
All right, so let's get off of Gears. I got another game I want to talk to you about that you might be interested. I played Injustice.
I downloaded the demo.
Okay, so we played it. We had a game night over at Ed's house on Saturday, and
up. Thanks for the invite.
You were invited. You were at drill, sir.
Okay.
So we busted it out. Everyone had a great time playing it. Really good-looking fighter.
Dude, it looks freaking sweet. Like, it looks so good. I haven't picked it up myself yet, but man, it looks really freaking good.
It looks incredible. Like, I mean, from the graphical fidelity and all that stuff, but the art direction overall like irks me so hard. Like, the costume design makes me want to die. And
some of the characters maybe are more than others.
Maybe I'm hyperbolizing a little bit.
Some of the characters more than others, though, because some of the characters look true to form. Like, Black Adam is just Black Adam. Like, that's his outfit, you know?
Yeah, but here's the thing is nobody gives two shits about Black Adam. Like, the characters that I actually care about, like, I have to pay extra to get the outfits. Okay, gosh. Really? I'm a doll fan. Like, I'm, like, worried about outfits. But, like, yo, I don't want this stupid like armor crap on Batman's face. Like, I don't want to look at that.
Right. And universally, I think everyone agreed that Wonder Woman just looks awful. Like, she's like super muscular, but like she has pecs and then breasts underneath them. It's really weird.
Okay, Fred, you're just not comfortable with a strong, independent woman.
Oh, okay. So I can't have a problem with that, but you can be worried about Batman's mask.
Yeah. Anyway,
shut up. I wanted to say some more about it.
Struck a nerve, huh?
No, here's the thing. So we played it for a bit. The game is fun, but I feel like it's completely unbalanced. Like, people who have never played this game before could pick, I think it was Deathstroke as their character and win virtually every game against someone who's been playing it for like a week or two.
Deathstroke is like a ranged character, right?
Yeah, he's got everything he does is like a 10-hit combo, and he's a ranged character. And by ranged, I mean like punch button is shooting.
Oh, man, the weirdest part about that is Deathstroke is like one of the worst comic book characters ever.
Yeah, pretty much. And then the game itself, I'm sure that, you know, I only played it a little bit on Saturday night, and it felt a little chunky and non-responsive. And I say that not that, like, if you hit punch, it's going to punch, but there's big delays in between when you actually throw a punch or when you're like when you stand up, there's an animation and you can't like interrupt the animation to start punching faster or anything like that. Some things just have to run their course. And the game has very specific timing. So for combos, like if you miss your window, there's not like a second window to get a combo off. You just don't do it. Like, you'll hit the kick and nothing will happen.
I've heard that complaint a lot, actually, from a lot of people who tried it. Yeah, I heard that it was really, really clunky. I can't remember what they said. They said to turn some setting off, and it fixes everything.
Yeah, but, I'm sure that people who get into this game and like play it competitively will learn that timing so that they can combo fluidly. But it seems to be very specific, and you need to know like what button to hit when. It's not like, you know, Street Fighter where you can just hit punch and just keep punching or, you know, Marvel, Capcom, anything. And you hit punch and then the world explodes. But it's a very nuanced fighter, which is weird for the audience, I think, that they're trying to hit for it, if that makes sense.
I think I know when I'm going to play this game, and I know I'm going to pick it up whenever the Game of the Year edition with all DLC is like 15 or 20 bucks. Because, like, you know, I don't try to play fighting games online. Like, that's not what I'm in it for. Like,
you're not a tournament guy or anything like that. Yeah, you just want to see the story.
Yeah. And the way that NetherRealm has been doing, you know, fighting game stories, like, okay, like the other day, like, little therapy session. Me and Katie got into a little fight. Little, you know.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell us about it, John?
Went to separate corners. You know. Went to separate corners.
Interesting. Interesting.
She went in the bedroom, was reading on her Kindle, and I went to the couch, and I decided to play one of those games I picked up on that massive Xbox sale, and I started playing Marvel versus DC. DC
would be an excellent title.
Well, no, remember the Amalgaverse or whatever it was? Oh god, that was the worst thing. DC versus Mortal Kombat.
Oh my god, that game is horrible.
It's not good. It's
it's
not good.
It's a bad game.
But the thing they do with the story mode where you bounce from character to character and stuff like that, the thing they started with that and then they blew it out and made it good in the last Mortal Kombat that came out. If you want to call it Mortal Kombat 9, you're welcome to. But I think the way NetherRealm is doing fighting game story modes is really kind of impressive. So when I eventually pick this game up, that's what I'm looking for, you know? Yeah.
Duh. So tell me more about this fight you had. Were you perhaps taking out your hatred for your mother on Katie? Could that be a possibility?
Well,
Interesting. Now,
Fred, I have a notepad.
Have him lie down on one of those little bench things.
I have a therapist, Fred, and I would never go to you. Jeez, you have. You lack empathy at the basic level.
Interesting, interesting. Now, could you be taking out your late hatred for your father on me?
You know, Fred, I'm going to take out everything where you said late and homosexuality.
Oh, I think come on. That's not.
No,
that's
mean.
You denying
that's mean.
Yourself.
No, it's mean, dude.
No, it's not.
I think we all know if I was gay, I'd be pretty okay with that.
I think we all know you'd probably be a little bit too okay with that, just like you're a little bit too okay with everything else.
I'm cool with everything. Anyway, wow, hard to segue from that one.
Yeah, really.
I can segue from that one. You ready?
Yeah.
Hey, John, I played a different game.
Oh wow, what?
No.
Excellent. Very nice.
Yeah, I try. I was working on that one for a while. John, I played Poker Night at the Armory.
The first one?
Or Inventory. Yes, the first one. I got it for free because I pre-ordered the second one.
Okay.
So, surprisingly enough, first of all, this is DLC, the game.
No, that game exists. It's called DLC Quest.
Yeah, but this is basically the same thing. It's actually really fun. I didn't think I'd like it, but I got
the
into
poker?
It. The poker's whatever. The problem I have with the poker mechanic is since poker is so heavily based on bluffing, it's hard to read the computer.
It really isn't. Poker is almost entirely based on math.
In this game, I feel like the bluffing mechanism is very important because I think they will do non-logical things. Like they will not – like even if they have a sure bet – or not a sure bet. Even if they have a terrible hand, they will try to win. And it's not like they're just going like, okay, I can't win this hand, fold. Like there is a level of bluffing involved. But since the amount of dialogue any given character has for bluffing is limited, it's very hard to tell whether they're bluffing or not, which is actually probably the perfect poker simulator. But the game really has nothing to do with poker and has everything to do with the dialogue. And more specifically, it has everything to do with Strong Bad.
Oh, gosh.
Dude, I gotta tell you, I miss Homestar Runner so goddamn much.
You and me both, okay? Seriously.
Yeah, they haven't updated that website in like 3 years, but then every now and then I hear them doing something. Like, they were on the last Aquabats CD. They were they did the Armory thing, and then they did something else, and I can't remember what the hell it was now. Every now and then they just pop up. And it makes me super happy to, like, remember how much I love them. And then I get sad that the website doesn't get updated anymore. But, like, the dialogue in this game is really the driving force. And it's really quite funny. After maybe 2-3 hours, you'll hear everything worth hearing. And then you can stop playing it because you probably don't care about Team Fortress 2 stuff.
I like TF2.
I like TF2 in like, theory. Like, I like the videos they make. And then, you know, I played it, and it was kind of fun. But then I was like, man, if I really wanted to play this, I would have to stop playing everything else.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't feel that's necessarily true. I'm a fairly casual TF2 player. I can pick it up and then, you know, put it down for, like, a little while and then decide to pick it up again. It's not really a big deal.
All right, real talk. Like, the reason I stopped playing it was because it was like straight up mouse and keyboard. It didn't recognize the controller, and I was like, I'm getting arthritic.
You're one of those.
John's a controller guy.
It's not that I'm one of those. It's I've become one of those. And it's hard to go back and like. If, for example, when we played Amnesia for Game Club, I was walking around with gnarled claw hands for about 2 weeks. I don't know. My dexterity's gone.
So, like, my question to you is, how small is your friggin' keyboard?
He's on a MacBook.
No. But I mean, I've got a keyboard. I've got an external keyboard. It's just something about it. And I've got this awesome MMO mouse that I bought when I thought I was going to get into Star Trek Online.
Oh, okay.
He quit that because it didn't have controller support.
No, it has. Oh. It has decent controller support. I quit that because it turns out that like no. No, MMOs. No. This isn't fun.
Now, keep in mind, John is the same person who, when I told him I was playing Hawken, he's like, does it have controller support?
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, Hawken, as great as it is, barely has keyboard support because there's 400 buttons.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Anyway.
Kinect support. So
Poker Night was a lot of fun. It's free if you pre-order Poker Night 2. Poker Night 2 has a lot more content in it for other games, including Borderlands 2, if you get it on Steam. And it also, the dealer is GLaDOS.
What?
Yeah, it's... It looks like it's going to be. I'm really excited about
shit,
it.
Shit, you guys! Did you guys see the trailer for Pacific Rim?
Is it the Comic-Con one or is it a new one?
I don't freaking know. I saw it was in front of Jurassic Park 3D last week.
No, but GLaDOS is the voice of the good guy robot AI thing, right?
So I don't know. It's there. Whatever.
So I was listening to I actually saw an interview with Guillermo del Toro after New York Comic Con this year.
Can you say that again?
Guillermo del Toro.
Your wife is Mexican. Double L is a Y, right? Guillermo?
Guillermo, yeah.
God.
Whatever. Willie the Bull. His name is William the Bull.
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so I was watching this interview of William the Bull talking about Pacific Rim, and the character who does the GLaDOS voice in the movie is GLaDOS. He actually went to Valve and said...
He got approval for that.
Yeah, I want permission and I want that voice actress and I want the technology. I want to make her sound like that. So, like, because he's such a huge Portal fan.
Well,
so,
I don't think... You made him sound like a little too forceful, I think, when you did your impression there. Also, a lot less Spanish.
A lot less. I'm not Spanish, John.
All right.
Listen, Willie the Bull and me go way back. I actually met him at...
I give your impression 2 out of 10.
Actually, can I tell you? I met him. I went to... Back when I worked for Fangoria Magazine, we went to a screening of this movie called The Orphanage, of which he was a producer on. It was like a ghost story horror movie from the Spanish director. No, he was a really nice guy. Him and my wife got to talking because they both grew up in Mexico, and they went on for like 10 minutes.
That's awesome.
John, are you bored of us?
What? No, that's rad.
It's like the best save ever.
anyway. Oh, guys, that's great. Seriously. The worst.
Okay, yeah. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with more show.
Yay.
Telling you to bring us back. Sorry.
Oh, okay. How do I want to bring us back? I got to think about this.
Hey, welcome back to Fantastic Neighborhood. Hey, Cassie, so I figured we'd take the opportunity to talk to you a little bit about your game and stuff. So, yeah. Tell us a little bit more about Electronic Super Joy. I know we tried to pull a meats before. But what are some of the... What are some of the big inspirations behind it? What is it at its core? And most importantly, when are we going to get to play it?
So I'm definitely the wrong person to ask about where the inspirations are drawn from for this game. Whenever I get asked this question, Michael likes me to tell people that basically it came out of his butt because he just decided, let's make a platformer, and then we made one. It's totally uninspiring. It's just like, let's do a thing. Totally just gonna pull it out of brains, and there we go. Ta-da, there it is.
I think that's still probably better than like any justification that Suda has for making anything. Usually his is because sexism.
Yeah.
You know, I like the honesty of this because I also kind of hate when people get all artsy about like their game. Like, not that some people don't justifiably do so, but like, well, you know, what I was trying to do was marry Matisse to Van Gogh and, you know, try to like a fusion and a unity between the two.
Fred, let me stop you right there and predict. And can I take a guess of what game you're describing right now?
It's who, me?
Yeah, no, that's God of War Ascension, right?
Oh no,
yes.
You know, it was a combination of that and Black Ops.
Oh yeah, Blops 2.
Oh yeah, 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 definitely. It's the height of artistry, absolutely.
Yeah, but so tell us a little bit more about the game, like. I think we understand at the core it's a platformer, but what,
yes,
what kind of platformer? I mean, we understand from what you've been playing that you're a masochist, so I'm kind of worried about eventually playing this myself.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, it's definitely for the hardcores, and we made it purposely that way, and that's kind of the reason why I love it. Like, level design has turned me into a very horrible, very mean person. Because I'll be building a level and I'll go, what can I do to just torture my player just a little bit, but not enough that they'll rage quit.
So like, if you were like, we've drawn the comparison to Meat Boy already.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like Meat Boy sort of, I don't want to say it invented its own genre so much as it like really created its own niche within the genre. But like, yeah, if you were to compare it to the difficulty level of Meat Boy, would you say like more or less on par with?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like it's pretty much on par. I feel like it is. A lot of people have been like, people who are like really hardcore platformers who were, you know, came by at PAX and tried it out were like, oh man, this game, Meat Boy, this game is definitely on Meat Boy levels of difficulty. And I'm like, that's a good thing. I'm happy with that.
So why don't you tell us how you got involved in
actually,
the project?
I have more questions, Fred.
Oh, God damn it, John. Mechanics. Have more questions then.
So, I know you guys are planning on or releasing this for iPad and Android.
Yeah.
How does that work?
Basically touchscreen buttons. So there's going to be like, you know, a left and right movement button on screen, and then a single button for jump and whatever the other action is.
So it's left, right, and action.
Yes. Yeah, right. It's left, right, and action. So at all times, you're going to have a jump and another ability. So sometimes it's ground pound. That's your default. Sometimes it's fly. Sometimes it's double jump. So that's basically how that is done. So as opposed to using two buttons and then the controls get kind of finicky because it's like, oh, no, I lost the placement of where the B button is on my screen. Like, it's... I hate that.
Yeah.
I hate that on iOS games.
Yeah, like when I saw that, like I kind of got worried because, you know, like virtual D-pads tend to be bad, except
yeah.
for like you know, League of Evil does it really well because it is, you know, it's left and right and then the I think two buttons in that one, but if there's too much to do, if there's like, for example, two virtual analog sticks, like I've yet mm-hmm. to see a good execution of that. But as long as you keep it simple, I'm sure.
Yeah, and it really is. It like when you come down to the core of the mechanics, they are really, really simple, which makes it just easier for me as a designer to go, okay, so I don't have like a million like different button combinations to worry about to figure out how I'm going to work the mechanics of this level or things like that. It's like, so all I need to do is figure out what jump and fly or jump and pound or jump and like double jump type deal things do I need to work on for this level? Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, so basically, we just wanted to keep it really, really simple with the touchscreen controls because I've played a couple of games on, iPad or iPhone that I really love, but the controls really trip me up because there's, more than one button to deal with. Yeah. One of the things that I'd really like to see happen, and I don't know if it will because that's all on Michael, is I'd really like to see compatibility for like wireless Bluetooth controllers as well.
Fred has a really rad one for Android that he picked up at PAX.
Yeah, but you probably got it at PAX too, the MOGA that they were giving away at PAX East.
They were giving these away? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, they were giving them away.
What?
Oh man, you were working a booth though, huh?
Yeah, no, I was so I was and I mean, it's not a bad thing, but I was totally busy at the booth the entire time because it means like I constantly had people there, which was really freaking cool.
I used to work the booth at cons.
We had huge crowds of people in front of the game at all times, which is that's amazing. It was so good.
I used to volunteer to work the booth at Gen Con for a couple of my friends' companies, and like I'd always be like, yeah, no, I'm getting a free ticket to Gen Con. That's awesome. And then if you're really actually working the booth, you miss the entire con.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel that way. I managed to sneak away for a couple of things. Like, there were a couple of panels that I wanted to go to and that sort of thing. But that really is all I did. I went to, like, one or two panels, and then I was at the booth the entire rest of the weekend.
Cool. So, anyway, let's learn a little bit more about how you got involved. How is it you've come to work on this game?
So that's a very not glamorous story either.
That's right. We're not exactly a glamorous podcast.
That's that's okay. I've always known that I wanted to get into game design as a kid. Like ever since I was like really, really little, I've always been in games. Like I've loved games ever since I was really little. And one day, I looked at my dad and I said, "Dad, one day I'm going to make games." And he was like, "Yep, that's nice." So, fast forward several years, I go to a game design college, and that was a fun experience, but that's maybe a story for another day.
So, did you tighten up the graphics on level 5, or is that shit? Sorry.
was that kind of almost sort of a joke right there?
Well, come on. We all saw the commercial, that commercial where like the two guys sitting around playing Xbox and he says, "Tighten up the graphics on level 5. Come on.
Yeah. It was pretty much the classes were all 3D modeling for the most part, which is, it was kind of disappointing.
I'm actually kind of intrigued by this because like I don't, You're the first person I know who went actually, that's not true. I know one other person who went to a game design school, and they wound up working the computer. They work as, like, IT in Wall Street right now.
Yeah. A lot – for whatever reason, from what I'm seeing, a lot of the game design schools in around the Toronto area basically just teach, like, almost, like, all 3D modeling. Like, my program had one class that I feel like really taught me something that I'm using in my, my job working on ESJ. And that class was the game theory class, where, like, it was my favorite class. It was the best thing ever. My teacher would come in, and he'd be like, "Okay, guys, so this is what game mechanics are, and this is how it's going to affect how fun your game is, and this is how that stuff works. And today we're going to use Minecraft as an example. And this is, what a MacGuffin is. And I'm going to teach you guys how to make a game design document. And for your final assignment, you're going to build a prototype of a board game. And then you guys are all going to play each other's board games at, like, the end of the semester." And it was the best thing ever. And we had that class for one semester, one day a week, just for that first year. And that was it. And I was so disappointed because I wanted more of that class. It was awesome. And then the rest of it was all, "Here's some character drawing and 3D modeling. Okay, there go. That's what we're teaching you." And I'm like, "Oh, okay. Thanks."
So back to Electronic Super Joy. Do you guys have a release date planned? When are you planning on letting me play this thing?
when it's ready.
Basically. Oh, the joys of being an indie developer.
Oh, yeah. It's basically exactly that. Like, we don't want to tack down, you know, a date until we know it's going to be exactly ready for that date, because we want to make sure it's just right. Like, we don't want to have to cram everything in and, you know, just in case everything, like, something goes wrong. We want to make sure it's really, really ready for public consumption before we throw it out there.
How about, do you guys have your eye on anything like Steam Greenlight or, you know, bringing
it? Not yet. I think we're looking into it. That's more Michael's side of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting into Greenlight. Humble Indie Bundle would be really nice. we'll see.
Well, you can always start in the minor leagues, you know, like Indie Royale or Indie Game Stand.
Yeah.
One of the AA, AAA indie bundle sites.
You could create a Kickstarter and pretend like you don't have a game ready for development yet, like you just have a concept and screen captures.
Oh my god! Then, but people would know. People will totally know.
Yeah.
Oh
no! You just you say that was a demo just made for the cons. It's not the real game. And then you do a big Kickstarter, get $1 billion, because that seems to be what happens now.
Fred, you realize like about like 10% of the Kickstarters actually get funded.
I know, but the ones that do seem to go big.
The ones that do. All have me to thank, as I give another $10 to a game. No, but that's really rad that you can say when it's done. It just harkens back to the good old days of George Broussard and Duke Nukem Forever. But
that's kind of the beauty of being indie, is that you really do like play by all your own rules. You don't have to answer to your investors or any of that.
But is the game your full time job, or is this a labor of love? Well, I mean, the two aren't necessarily mutually exclusive. But
do you do to buy food? Is what John's asking.
Is this your 9-to-5?
It was, and currently now I'm actually technically off contract because the game is basically almost done. So Michael doesn't really have very much work for me left, which is okay.
Oh, you heard it here, folks. The game is launching next week.
Not that soon. Not that soon. Very soon. We're close. We're really close, but I can't say how close yet because anything can happen.
Oh, come on. Just release it and then patch it later. That's what all the big players do.
Oh, pay for alpha access.
Yeah, I don't know. What we were doing at PAX is we had these little bundles that we were selling with basically you had the soundtrack and a set of posters, three posters and some buttons. And you bought that for like $20 and you also get early access to the game. So like the beta version of the game when it comes out as well. So we were doing that at PAX and we should honestly see about. Well, it would be hard to do it from home as well, like mail things out to people. Because from our friend's experience, apparently it's very expensive to do that sort of thing, and then you know mail out a bunch of posters to people. And
oh yeah, we
especially if you're doing it from Canada.
Yeah,
you know, even doing our holiday fun drive this year, like you know sending out 20 packages is. Gets you know it adds up pretty quickly.
Oh yeah, no, I believe it. It sounds like a giant pain.
So anyway, Fred, you got any more questions about you know the game?
Well, no, I was actually just curious more about like so you're a level designer.
I am a level designer. Yes.
So how does you know it's an interesting role because like it's very. Boiled down to what it actually is, like you know, a graphic designer could do graphic design for any number of things, and you know, just in general, like a programmer could, you know, it doesn't necessarily dictate what language they're working on and all that. But like, you literally design levels. So, what kind of studying and what kind of mindset do you have to bring into that?
Oh, that's a funny question. So, school didn't teach me any of that. School didn't teach me any of that. What ended up happening was I went to school. I did my internship. I through my internship boss, I met Michael, and Michael and I became very good friends. Michael hired me to work on this game with him that he normally makes all of his games by himself. But he was like, I need help this time. You have all the skills I need. Work for me. Quit your retail job. And I said, hell yes, I will quit my retail job. And then from there, he basically taught me from scratch everything I need to know. So the pixel art that I'm doing is something that I've never picked up pixel art up until working on ESJ. I've never picked up level design before working on ESJ. It's just something that I sort of, you know, learned from working with Michael, and, you know, basically I learned as I went. So I would, you know, personally, I would pick up inspiration from, you know, platformers that I've played in the past. So, you know, Mario, Kirby, Mega Man, those sorts of things. And I'd go,
never
okay,
heard of
so. Yes. So, for me, like, it was a lot of experimentation. Like, when I build my levels, I just sort of go, okay, let's take a couple, like, really cool scenarios that, you know, would be tricky to do because, you know, tricky platforming and hard jumps to you know, get just right, and play around with that. So I would build, you know, a couple of platforms or whatever, and then play test it right in Unity and go, okay, that doesn't feel quite as tight as I think I would want it to, or this jump is way too easy, so I'm gonna, you know, space it out a little bit. You know, and basically I would just build and test and build and test until I found something that was fun to play, or, you know, was really, really hard but really satisfying when you really got down, those sorts of things. So that was my way into that, because, you know, I had no classical training. I basically just kind of felt it out on my own.
But, like, you sort of just, like, you said, you know, damn it all, I'm going to work in games and I'm going to work my way up the ladder. And that's sort of what you're doing right now, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I took a huge risk.
And
especially going
yourself,
the indie route, I took a huge risk, right?
Absolutely. So. Do you see yourself, being a level designer for the rest of your career? Are you working up to something, or are you working down to something? I don't even know what the ladder is. But where, like, you know, when all is said and done, what do you want to do in the gaming industry?
I'm kind of a generalist. I'm not necessarily really, really good at one skill set. I'm kind of good at a lot of different skill sets. So, I just want to make games. I want to work on really cool experiences and maybe tell a couple of really cool stories, and that's what I want to do. And as long as that's what I'm doing, I'm happy. So, you know, big or small, if I'm working on games, I'm like, yeah, I'm working on games. It's so freaking cool. So that's basically where I sit on that.
That's pretty awesome.
That's
Don,
right.
You got any more? I think, or we should probably move on to Game Club, huh?
Yes. Well, let's transition quickly to Game Club.
Yeah.
So, this week on Game Club, we played, or we were supposed to play.
Yeah, let's not use that we.
It's the royal we. This week's Game Club game is The Silent Age on iPad. It's a time travel based adventure game with a sort of side scrolly sort of art style that's slightly reminiscent of Out of This World or Another World, depending on where you're from, and that sort of rotoscope style. I don't think they actually did, like, you know, the old timey motion cap for it or whatever. But for those of you joining us for the first time, Game Club is where my co-host and I play a game together and then talk about its finer points and spoil it. But, Fred, what happened this week?
So, I marathoned the shit out of a lot of games this week. I really just sort of had my gaming week. And on Sunday morning, I woke up and my back was feeling a little weird. Just like a general pain, didn't think much of it, popped a pain pill, like an over-the-counter thing, went on with my day. Around, let's say, 12:30 at night, I'm like, yeah, I usually stay up pretty late too, but it's like 12:30 and I'm like, all right, I need to start this Game Club game because I'm going to finish playing it on Monday and that'll be that. So I'm sitting on the couch. I reach for the I stand up to reach for the iPad, and I literally just feel like this super sharp pain in my back. I black out. I fall back down, and my back is completely out. So I didn't get to play. I didn't get to play the game. You know, I went to the doctor the next day. I pulled my lumbar muscle or something along those lines. Geez. Yeah. That so today horrible. Was pretty painful too. It's not. It's much worse than it sounds. It's just really debilitating. So I didn't get a chance to play this because yesterday I also, you know, went to the doctor, took some painkillers, and passed the fuck out for 12 hours.
Oh, so why don't you interview me about my gameplay experience here?
Okay, John, so why don't you tell us a little bit about what you took away from this game? What was your experience?
So the Silent Age is the version available on iOS right now is the first chapter or the first part. We'll say it might be chapter. First chapter.
Episode.
Yeah, first episode, that's right. And then there's five chapters within the episode. It's completely free, and their sort of business model is after you finish the game, you're asked if you want to, you can donate, which is – I really am kind of a I know that it's not always going to be super successful, but I'm really big fan of this model as somebody that's recently subscribed to Giant Bomb and understand it being in the advertising industry and understanding how cheap, you know, content actually is. You know, every view, if you go to a webpage right now, you're essentially worth about, depending on the site, about a quarter of a penny to half a penny. So, you know, us folks out here who are like willing to pay for content, I feel like it's going to pay off going forward. But that being said, this game is a point-and-click adventure with a time travel mechanism. So the the game starts out, you're a janitor and somewhat of a simpleton, going about your sort of daily job in this office. There's a brief montage before that introduces you to the character and kind of gets you very quickly to feel something for him. Because of the time period and the things that he's probably gone through because of that. And very quickly, it sort of, you stumble upon this guy who's bleeding to death, and he says he's a time traveler, gives you a time travel device, and tells you to find him in this current time and tell him what's going on. So that's sort of the setup for it. And, the next, about an hour is getting out of the situations using pretty standard point-and-click adventure mechanisms to sort of get through these puzzles. But it's I'd say it's more logical than the height of the adventure game, like those mid-90s ones where, you know,
like, oh, find rock, tie string to rock, throw rock in water, rock gets wet, use rock to extinguish fire.
It, you know, it never gets as stupid as combining a rubber chicken with a pulley. But it's easy. It's really easy to get through. But, you know, it's neat. The art style is kind of neat. The writing is fine. But for what it is, for like a quick hour or so, maybe an hour and a half, it's a really worthwhile experience. And the world created is interesting enough to where, I mean, I want to go back, and, you know, I threw them $3 or whatever. I think really, like, you should check this out. I think it's if you're into adventure games, this is definitely if part of the genre is heading very much in the Walking Dead sort of experience. I think the rest of it, in order to survive, is going to need to be more this style game, in which it's really approachable.
That's cool. And so, as far as difficulty, you're saying it's like it's not nearly the level of like when we played Machinarium or whatever the title was of that game.
It is not nearly as difficult as that game.
Cool, and it's on your favorite console for adventure games. I see the iPad.
I think my favorite console for adventure games is probably the laptop. Yeah, iPad. iPad.
How was it control wise? Was it, were the hotspots like large enough and all that?
Yeah, no, I mean mechanically it's perfectly sound. And the animations are really gorgeous. The art style is really appealing. It's got like a very nice clean aesthetic, kind of like I want to say it reminds me of like Mad Men promotional materials, but not Mad Men itself.
It's heavily vectored, right? Like it's silhouetted vectored for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that always looks good when it's like one or two colors, right?
Yeah. It's they keep it really simple. I think it's a really pleasant play experience. And this sort of everyman thrown into an incredible situation is the basis for so many games. But like, you know, or even like think about like, you know, I played Tomb Raider recently where it's like, well, she's tough for what she is. But, you know, within 20 minutes, she's like headshotting people with a bow and arrow. This is very much he is an everyman and he is surprised every time that he does not die in these stupid situations. It's pretty cool that way.
Sweet. So it sounds like, I mean, I'm definitely going to try to make up the time I missed on this one because it does sound interesting enough. Anything else to say? I feel like you hit all the points.
That about does it. I really recommend it, Fred. I mean, I know you don't have an iOS device yourself, but it's coming to Android, so I'll keep an eye out for that. And I think these guys, I don't know, sort of throwing their trust to their community. I think it's interesting. I hope it works out well for them.
Cool. So I guess we'll be right back with the outro.
I thought we said we were going to stop taking fake breaks.
Oh God, I took a deep breath. That counts.
So Game Club next week is Starseed Pilgrim, which
I picked this because of the name.
Yeah,
John, you offered me a list of what was it, like five games?
Yeah.
And I threw a dart at the wall, and we landed on this one. I have no idea what I'm in for.
So I'm just going to read the description briefly. So you are a gardener tending to empty noise and empty space to fill them both with color. And color, I should note, is spelled with a U.
Yep. Yay.
You're a refugee building your own world away from the spreading darkness. You're an explorer discovering new places, new rules, and new fascinations. The universe is bigger than you know. Yay.
I'm intrigued. That tells me absolutely
Alex.
Nothing about the gameplay, but...
Yeah. No, it definitely... The thing is about Starseed Pilgrim is that it's going to be totally unhelpful in you figuring out how the game actually works. It's going to be all you. It will not tell you anything. You're going to figure it out all by yourself, and it's going to be that much more satisfying because you do.
So, head to starseedpilgrim.com, and they will, if you follow down a couple clicks, you'll be able to purchase it, and it's available in. A bundle with a couple other indie games for about $10. So if you actually want to head to Probability Zero, and the zero is a number not spelled out, you can get this game and
shouldn't it be probability Z? No,
because zero is a number. Z is a letter.
Oh,
Fred.
It's a Z. Indeed. Okay, my bad.
By the way, Probability Zero is also an awesome game, and you should play that too.
Hey, Fred, you want to know how to spell zero? It's spelled Z E R O.
That is correct.
Thank you. I had a Canadian instructor at one of the schools I went to for the military who refused to use the NATO phonetic alphabet and would make it up on his own. He's like, "Hey, troopers over there, get over to the Larry Z," which, you know, he meant LZ, landing zone. But anyway.
Oh, you mean M, as in Mancy.
good one.
I try. Anyway, so we have normally on the show we do a community segment. I think we got one or two bites here. What do we got?
Yeah, so Zed writes in. Zed writes in and he says our personal thoughts on the Ouya. And Fred, this is, reminds me, have you got your Ouya yet?
I have not gotten my Ouya yet.
I'm gonna go on a limb here and say that they have shipped 10,000 units.
Well, they actually are doing regular updates on the Kickstarter and saying how many they've shipped, and they say that they're on target right now. They say that by the end of the month, 100% of the Kickstarters are going to be shipped.
That's a week.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Dude, the videos I've seen of the UI and of the buttons sticking is like. Kind of, I'm back to glad I canceled my pre-order, but.
Well, so Cassie, what are your thoughts?
I'm not sure because, I mean, initially I was like, oh, cool. This looks like a thing that could be interesting, you know, really easy, to, you know, for indies to get their game onto another console. This is really cool. And then I stopped looking into it. Just in general, I just stopped looking.
Well, since it's Android-based, it doesn't seem like it would be, you know, really difficult for you guys, or I don't know.
Yeah, no, not at all. So the thing is I know pretty much absolutely next to nothing about it from that moment that I discovered that it was a thing that is going to exist at some point. After that, it was sort of like, oh, I'm not reading on it. So I don't know. I know nothing about it right now. I don't know, you know, as it were, the way that people have reacted to it, you know, to, you know, as you're saying, the button sticking in the UI is like, I didn't know about that. I had no idea. I didn't know.
John gets a little bit too into the industry sometimes. Like, I like to be surprised every now and then. And then whenever I think I'm about to find something out, John walks in like, you know, John's like a walking spoiler alert for things I want to know about.
No, it's that's not true. It's just like, you know, the blogs I check regularly are, you know, The sites I look at the most are Giant Bomb, Polygon, and Joystick, right? Like, I mean, that's this is my big interest, that and the Seattle Mariners. So,
oh God, is that the game you're waiting to go to watch?
I'm only missed the first hour.
Oh, you're the worst.
They're winning. I am kind of watching it on my computer right now, which is maybe why the audio quality is suffering.
Busted.
So anyway, you know, I'm probably still going to end up buying one, Fred, simply because, like, I can't not buy things.
Yeah, no, you do have that problem.
So, anyway.
I hate having that problem. I know that problem.
Yeah. It's bad. This is, you know, we're here at the end, Fred. If you want to get featured on the show like Zed was, you can email us at letters@fantasticneighborhood or call us on our hotline at 720-HOODIE-6, which is 720-466-3436.
Yes, you can also find us on Twitter at Fantastic Hood. You can find us individually on Twitter. John is at Hey John Anderson.
Fred is at Hey, fuck. He's at ProtoAddict. And Cassie, what's your Twitter handle?
It is at D20Love.
And you can check out her. You could check out her upcoming game. Shit, I'm going to say it wrong again.
Electronic Super Joy.
I want to say the Super first.
Super Joy, yeah. Electronic or Super Electronic? No, that's the European version. Hey, buddy, come play Super Electronic Joy Happy.
Electronic Super Zid. Oh, my God. You guys got to watch out for iOS clones. It's just going to, it really will be the title, Super Joy Electronic.
Oh, my God. Well, it's funny. We have a friend who very affectionately likes to call it Electric Space Ninja.
I like that, too.
He's joked that at some point he's going to make a clone of it and call it Electric Space Ninja.
No, that should be the fanzine.
That happen.
That could be the online forum for the game. Electric Space Ninja.
Totally should be. That would be amazing.
Or like steam-powered Space Ninja. Something just, I don't know.
Ooh, and Valve will sue your ass if you say steam-powered. But, yeah, so be sure to check that game out, and that game, Electronic Super Joy, will be out when it's ready, although I've got a hard date of 2013.
I think we can safely say this year.
It'll definitely be this year. It'll definitely be this year. This year. It's close, but we don't want to tack a solid date on it quite yet. But it is close. It will be soon. We don't have a day when.
Well, when it does come out, you'll let us know and we'll tell everyone.
Oh, absolutely. I will send you guys an email things. And you can,
we will let all the internets know that it's available.
All of our internets. So anyway, that about does it for today. Of course, shout out to Cassie. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was our pleasure. Fred, you got anything else to say?
Are you just doing this so you can cut me?
Marker dropped.
And welcome to episode 63 of the Fantastic Neighborhood Podcast.
Wrong,
I'm your host, Fred.
Wrong,
God
wrong.
Damn it, what's wrong?
It's episode 62, clown.
God damn it. Okay, we'll start that over.
No, we're not. We're rolling with it. Hey, that was Fred Earhart. I'm John Anderson. And joining us this week is...
Is that me? Is that Mike? You?
Yeah, I probably should have given you a warning.
Oh, you're going to fit right in here.
Yeah, no worries. Hi.
that's Cassie. Man, I should have asked you how to say
it. Go for it. Try it.
Chewy.
That's the one that everyone gives me. And
no,
is...
I knew that was wrong.
It's Chew.
Yeah, okay, we're here with Cassie Chew. She is a designer on. I'm sorry. It's I have written down here Super Electronic Super Joy.
Electronic Super Joy.
That's right.
We are just butchering this intro. Okay, Fred.
Best ever.
Yeah, that's kind of our calling card. Best episode ever.
Great.
So,
okay,
Fred.
John, now you're making it awkward. So, John.
So, Fred.
John.
Fred?
Yes?
What, dude?
What's up?
Oh, this is the worst we've ever done.
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm loving this. This is fantastic.
You know, neighborhood.
.com.
Okay, so seriously, welcome to Fantastic Neighborhood. That was the cold open. We will start over, Fred.
All right, so here goes. And it's episode 62, right?
Sure.
62, I believe. Okay. That's what it said on the notes.
Yeah, but I'm often wrong.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Fantastic Neighborhood Podcast, episode 62. I'm your host, Fred. With me, as always, is John. Say hello, John.
Hello, John. God, this is really even this one is the worst. I thought we couldn't make a worse intro than we did before.
Is it more worst than the last worst that
it's
we had?
It's the worst, but we're keeping this one because my baseball game starts at 8, and I want to miss as little of it as possible. Joining us this week is Cassie.
With a special guest host.
Oh, I think I'm getting some cutting out because I heard nothing for a little while up until special guest host. I'm like, oh.
Fred, are you still there? We're really butchering this.
I know. John, I'm here. I think we lost you.
Oh, my wife is probably using the computer again.
How dare
she? Yay.
Okay. All right.
So we should just keep the first one. The first one was so good.
Let's just try it one more time.
Okay. It sounds like you guys are getting a little bit crackly for me, so I don't know.
How do I sound now?
Still crackly.
Damn it.
John, do you have video on? No, right?
No, let's just, let's try to reform the call. I hate Skype. I'm going to hang up on you guys and I'll call you right back.
All right. But yeah, it's going to be soon.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hey.
Okay. I can hear everybody. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Fred?
Yes.
Great. I love your goatee. All right.
I love my goatee too.
One more time. One more time with feeling.
With feeling. It's more.
How much more feeling could I give it, John?
Okay. All right. I'll handle this one, Fred, and I'll hand it off to you. Okay?
All right. You do that.
Welcome to Of course. Welcome after episode 62.